Welcome to the politicalbetting.com polling matter show. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, we're going to be doing things slightly differently this week, where each of our guests chooses a topic to talk about for a couple of minutes, and then we debate it. So let's see how we get on. I'm joined today by fellow podcaster and noise of the crowd editor Leo Barassi.
Kieran.
And also Julia Rampen from The New Statesman and also editor of The Staggers. Julia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
So, I suppose, Julia, yeah, welcome to the show. I suppose it's very good to be settling into your new job in a time of calm when, you know, there's not much going on in Westminster politics. So we asked you to sort of bring an idea to talk about polling related for the show. And what did you find?
Yeah, I thought that the latest YouGov poll on Scottish independence was quite interesting. And it was, just check the numbers here, but it was, 47% who want to be in favour of leaving the UK and after Brexit, and I think it was 53% who would still prefer to stay in. So I think it was interesting because immediately after Brexit, everyone said, this is it, this is Scottish independence, myself that included, and now this suggests that there's a more measured decision going on.
That is surprising, because I remember the week after the sort of Brexit vote, there was all these polls from people like Servation, other companies saying there'd been a surge in, you know, support for independence. I guess maybe that was a big part of the shock, if you like. I mean, you've been up in Edinburgh this past weekend, was it?
On Friday,
so what were you doing there?
So I was there writing for The New Statesman, reporting on exactly this question. And I was particularly interested in people who'd campaigned or supported the Remain campaign during the Scottish referendum and how they felt now. Because I know that for a lot of people, staying in the EU was part of the hard-headed decision to stay in the UK. And what I heard from the people that I spoke to in the Labour Party there were that there was this moment of grief after the Brexit. And some people, everyone at that moment, felt deeply betrayed by what had happened, and a lot of them declared that they were for independence, and that was enough of that. And then over the next few weeks, there was this cooling off period, and a lot of them then reconsidered how they felt, started to feel a bit more positive about the idea of working together with other parts of the UK to get through the Brexit negotiations. So it hasn't been quite as profound as I, among many other people, expected.
I mean, Leo, what brings you in here? I mean, what do you make of some of what Julia's saying? Because that must be really worrying for the SNP. I'm sure on the morning after the Brexit vote, they must have thought, ah, eureka, we've got it. You know, this is the change in, I think Nicola Sturgeon said, material circumstances or something like this. And you know, now independence is inevitable. I mean, are you surprised by some of these findings and what Julia's saying?
Well, it is a surprise. 62% of voters in Scotland voted to remain. 43% of Remainers were pro-union. So it feels like there should have been quite a chunk of people who potentially could have been those who would tip the balance, who would take Scotland from being in favour of staying in the union to being ready to leave. Now, the fact that that hasn't happened, I think, suggests that on the scale of issues that voters in Scotland, particularly outside the Edinburgh bubble, are interested in.
The Edinburgh bubble, I've not heard that.
I thought I'd give it a go. the EU is just not on the same scale as Scottish independence. So it's something that can get people to the ballot box, but perhaps it doesn't motivate them so significantly as the big issue. I mean, from the SNP's perspective, I don't think that is necessarily a killer, though, because, look, there was never going to be, I think, realistically, another independence vote now. This is a longer-term game. The EU decision, Brexit, hasn't actually changed much. I mean, the pound in your pocket's a bit weaker, but there's no sort of fundamental obvious change in everyday life. Why would people have changed their minds now? Mm. I think the challenge for the SNP is to come up with the reasons that, as Brexit rolls on and becomes a thing, gives voters in Scotland a reason to say, oh, hang on, this isn't what I want, I do want something different, and to connect that with staying in the union. And I'm sure that's what we're going to see happening.
I mean, I think the tough challenge for the SNP is, I believe if they could come up with something concrete, you might see a big switch in these numbers. If you could promise continuity, perhaps more than the rest of the UK is going to go through. But the problem for the SNP is that when it comes down to the details, like whether they could negotiate to keep the pound or whether they'd have to keep the euro. It's that kind of thing where I think a lot of people would step back and say, actually, this is an even greater unknown. I mean, I think that some people will always feel that actually, the aim of the game is to be independent, and actually Brexit in its own way is the opportunity. But I think a larger proportion will be watching and waiting to see what the fallout is and consider their options, neither of which they'll be hugely excited about.
So more to come, I suppose, on the Scottish independence referendum debate. It's not going away, of course. I mean, Leo, you your topic was looking at kind of the Westminster voting intention and maybe a bit about Labour, wasn't it?
Yeah, and in a way, I think it ties in with what we're just talking about, that, look, if you're Nicola Sturgeon, you can firstly say the EU protected us in various ways and we're going to lose these protections and that's a reason for independence. But the other thing you could say, which, of course, was said for the last referendum, was that staying in the UK means permanent Tory government. I think at the time that wasn't entirely credible. It felt like Labour could be in government again.
Labour, dare we forget, we're on course to be the government.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're being kind and not reminding me of all the times I sat on your podcast and said that Ed Miliband was going to be Prime Minister. So let's talk about Labour.
You've got this poll on screen, which is a YouGov poll. Tories 42, Labour 28.
Yeah, so 14-point lead. To put that in context, I had a look for the last time I could find a government being 14 points ahead. I had to go back to spring 2003, the heady days of the Iraq War, the build-up to that. So that is how far back we have to go for a government being this popular. Now, this is partly a new Prime Minister bounce. I think even without the Labour coup, then we would still be seeing a bigger Tory lead than we had before. New Prime Ministers are always a bit more popular when they come in. I've been looking at this for a while, how long new Prime Minister's popularities last, and I think we'd expect it to be at least 6 months.
Before. That long, that's interesting.
At least, actually, it's nothing like what you get after, say, a party conference or another announcement. New Prime Ministers' increased poll ratings do tend to keep the party up for quite a while before people get bored of them. So this kind of lead isn't going to go away. I mean, 40 points is ridiculous. For an opposition to be this far behind, it can't be said enough how absolutely disastrous this is. And then let's put it in the context that it looks like Labour are almost certainly going to be keeping the same leader who's got them to this place.
I suppose, well, if I can add to that, it's not 100% clear that polling has corrected for the understating of the Conservative vote share either. Julia, on that happy note for the Labour Party, obviously the Labour leadership's been going on forever, it feels like, to be honest,
yeah.
At the moment.
For a large part of my career at the New States.
Yes, highly significant part. Yeah. What's your sort of latest impressions of the Smith versus Corbyn race as we sort of see?
Well, I mean, I know we were talking about there being some movement towards Smith, but I have to say most of the data that we're seeing is towards Corbyn, and a lot of the CLPs are coming out for Corbyn. Interestingly, I was speaking to someone who was telling me of CLPs in very much Tory areas who are voting for Corbyn, maybe because they are so hardcore that they're still going to a CLP in that area. But that's my feeling, is that we'll see another Corbyn victory. And I think the question, if that does happen, is what happens to all the people who have most of the PLP who have stood out against him? Will any of them go back, or will they try and find a role for themselves out in the cold, as it were?
I mean, you can go back and you can try and make an excuse for let's unite and that sort of thing, and I'd be interested to see what Owen Smith would do. I'm sure he would probably join the shadow cabinet in that scenario, but isn't the damage already done? I mean, you can't sort of undo a no confidence vote of, what was it, 80-odd%?
Yeah, and I think the difficulty as well is in the wider Labour membership. So we are seeing a huge turns out for Corbyn and a lot of support. I mean, the mayoral, one reason that I'm definitely feeling like Corbyn's going to win is just looking at the people who have won the nominations in Manchester, in Liverpool and in the West Midlands. They're all people who have either appeased Corbyn or outright backed him. So, and Luciana Berger, who stood out against Corbyn in June, came last.
Well, she also had the bad luck of being a woman in a Labour election.
Ouch. I mean, Leo, one of the things that people talk about is, you know, will Labour, the Labour Party itself split? And I think there was a YouGov poll on this issue, which I want to talk the listeners and viewers through. Now, it's quite a complicated polling exercise, really, isn't it? Because ultimately, you're trying to... We all know that voting itself is quite hard for people to predict their hypothetical behaviour. And then we're adding an extra layer here which says, oh, what happens if the Labour Party splits? But for the, let's do it anyway. So YouGov had a poll where they had 29% voting Labour, full stop. And then numbers slightly change when you talk about splits. But if the right wing split off, let's call it the Progress Party, 13% would vote for that, but 21% would stay voting for Labour. That would take 34% overall. And then, in the alternative universe where there's the Momentum Party or Momentum Labour or something,
can I just cut in just to say that the wording was quite careful to give alternative names for the parties as well. So
right.
People shouldn't get hung up on the names that you've just given there, that
sure.
They try different names. So
yeah. So hypothetical name, let's call it Momentum Labour, but whoever it might be, 14% vote for that, 19% stay with the Labour Party. So basically, what it seems to be saying is, you know, about if you split the Labour Party into thirds, one third would hive off and join this new bloc. Is that right? No, even less than, even a bit more than that. And then, you know, the rest would stay. I mean, what do you make of this poll and kind of some of those findings? For a start, it's a difficult poll to do, isn't it?
Well, it is difficult. Okay, so in terms of what it says, as you say, broadly, the overall Labour vote share stays about the same. It seems that they pick up 1 or 2% from UKIP. From some of the others, but it's no great shakes in terms of the overall change. Probably the most interesting thing is the Labour brand itself does seem to have some value, that there's something like about 4 or 5% of people who will vote for the party with the Labour name, however it's described, if we're assuming that there's overlap in the question answers. So it sort of suggests why there's interest, as you would expect, amongst people within the PLP who are considering a plot in who keeps the Labour name. I mean, there's obviously many other questions, but one of them is the brand loyalty of voters.
I mean, one of my questions would be, if you did see one of those splits, what happens to the rest of the party? Would it remain all Labour? Would we see the other side, given that I think we're assuming the left and the right are the most dynamic parts. Would we see the part of Labour go to the opposite side of the spectrum?
Because I often think when looking at these numbers, we almost, focusing on the Labour Party, we ignore the reality, which is if you look at the Conservative vote, regardless of what sort of you do with the Labour Party, the Conservative vote pretty much stays at 40%, which reminds me of some sort of commentators who have said the Labour Party, the best solution is to split and to have PR. But this says to me, given that Labour would have to presumably win to have PR, all that that's really going to do is just the Tories are going to say thank you very much and remain in power anyway. I mean, Julia, presumably for that reason, a lot of people within the Labour Party are quite sceptical about a split. Would that be right?
Yeah, I have to say, every conversation I've had, and I've been talking about two types of split, first the left-right and also the Scotland versus the rest of the UK, and I've just heard scepticism. I think everyone, going back to that Labour brand, they feel that it's their Labour and the others maybe be squatters that need to be evicted, but they're not moving. So that was the impression.
Well, the Scotland's one's an interesting one, though, isn't it? Because there has been talk of, I mean, going back to your original topic, there has been talk of like Scottish Labour being a completely separate entity.
Well, from everyone I spoke to in Scottish Labour, that is not what they want to see. And in fact, the main message I got from them was that they feel abandoned by the rest of Labour. They feel that this idea that they're being kind of written off as something separate is of no use to them. And there's almost a feeling, you know, they hate talk of a progressive alliance if it involves the SNP, because you forget that the deadliest rivals. And I heard kind words said about Ruth Davidson from Labour people in Scotland.
It was really popular. Like,
yeah.
We've talked about that before on this show, yeah.
The SNP are, I mean, They're
the enemy.
They're the Montagues and Capulets.
Very good. Yeah. I mean, Leo, what do you make of it? I mean, it does seem like Scotland's a real difficult issue for the Labour Party, isn't it? I mean, you know, there isn't really a smoking gun Labour can seem to use in Scotland to get that support back.
No, and I would absolutely defer to Julia's knowledge and judgment on that. And, you know, the existential question of whether Scottish Labour at some point might have to consider being a pro-independence party, which I know is a toxic question for many. I mean, just coming back to your point about the Progressive Alliance, and this isn't a viewpoint that I often find myself defending, but I think I would be a bit cautious about using this poll to say that Labour's ceiling, if it's split, is the sort of 33% and the Tories are automatically on 40%. I mean, the fundamental problem with a poll like this and any sort of hypothetical question is there's a vast amount of unknowns that can never be captured by this. So, you know, the question was worded as well as it could have been, but ultimately the reality of this comes down to who the leader is, how it's positioned, who the team around them are, you know, just a huge number of things that you can never ask people in advance, and people can't give a serious response. So, while I'm not convinced that a progressive alliance could sweep a majority in the Commons, I don't think that this poll is the thing that tells you that.
I want to go on to my topic in a moment, but before I do, you raised a point there, Leo, that I wanted to raise with Julia, which is about the independence and question and Labour's position on it, because I suppose if Scottish Labour was going to be pro-independence, then that would be an obvious reason for Scottish and, I don't know, the rest of the UK Labour or whatever you want to call it, to be split. I mean, what's your sense of the view on that sort of policy change amongst Labour people in Scotland? Because I guess the logic is, oh, well, if that's where the direction of travel, we should probably join it. But that's not necessarily the case that Labour supporters in Scotland would want to take that direction.
I mean, I should be clear that I was mostly speaking to people who are involved in the Labour Party, and everyone I spoke to was very against the idea of independence. Going back to this idea that they feel abandoned, they already view the SNP as the biggest enemy, so they see no benefit in joining them. Mm. And, I was actually quite surprised, apart from one or two people who had that moment after Brexit, that they changed their mind a bit. There's not much support there. But that's saying that the wider Labour electorate, I think a lot of them have already moved into the Yes camp. There was a group called Labour for Independence, which is still going and still updates its Facebook page. And I think the verdict is that a lot of traditional Labour voters moved over quite a long time ago to support the SNP. And the SNP manages to portray itself as having quite a left-wing agenda when actually it's probably closest to New Labour of any party around at the moment.
Oof, I'm sure the SNP would love that. Let's move on to topic three. I wanted to sort of look at the reactions to Brexit. I guess we sort of talked about that a little bit earlier today. But YouGov had a poll out recently which asked whether or not people thought the decision to leave the European Union was right or wrong, and 46% said right and 42% said wrong. And I suppose, in reality, what that seemed to show was that people haven't really changed their minds since. But I guess this idea of Brexit remorse wasn't really credible at that stage. And in terms of the demographics around who thinks it was the right decision and wrong decision, it kind of follows the usual things that you would expect around social class, age and geography. But there was a separate poll from GQR, which I tweeted recently, one particular chart from, but I want to talk about it now because I think it's just it doesn't talk about geography, but it talks about age and class and kind of links the two things together. So, I mean, people watching can see on screen, but for the benefit of people listening, what it does is it has the 18 to 34 age group split by social grade, the 35 to 64s split by social grade, and the 65 pluses split by social grade. And it's a fairly relatively complicated bar chart, but it's actually quite clear in terms of A, why Brexit happened, and B, some of the nuances around some of the demographics. And two things struck me. One was that, I guess as we already kind of know, which is that it was sort of older working class voters who voted in large numbers that ultimately made Brexit happen. Yes, the 65 and overs, ABC1s, were pro-Brexit too, but it was about two-thirds of 65 and overs in the C2DE class, and similar numbers amongst the 35 to 64. So anyone above 35 who was in C2DE, about two-thirds voted Leave. So that sort of tells you why Leave happened. But one thing that struck me, mainly because it sort of reinforced my own preconceptions, so I always like it when data does that, was that when you look at sort of the younger voters, there's a big social grade difference there. So when we talk about younger voters and their futures being stolen and young Remainers and that sort of thing, actually, what we're talking about is younger middle-class voters, because 71% of 18 to 34s in the ABC 1 range voted Remain. Only 53% of the same group amongst C2DEs voted the same way as well. So I thought that was an interesting nuance and something I've not seen from any other pollster so far. I mean, I wanted to pause and bring you guys in. I mean, Julia, we talked earlier about how there doesn't seem to be a lot of Brexit remorse at the moment. But, I mean, how do you see the sort of debate over the referendum fallout going at the moment?
In terms of that kind of demographic or...
The general Westminster...
I guess that poll just reminded me of something a friend said to me. She originally comes from North Wales, and she said... Because we were talking about how we were aware we're in this Facebook bubble. Personally, my Facebook page was full of people who want to stay in the EU. And I knew that it was a bubble, but that's what I saw. And she said I had the opposite. I was the only one on my Facebook page to say anything pro-EU, and everyone else from home was against it. And she's in her 30s, so that's, I guess, going into perhaps the geography, but also maybe the working class roots, because she was saying she comes from a working class background in this part of Wales.
That speaks to a wider media issue. I mean, you all know this working in the media yourself. Like, we do have our bubbles, don't we? I mean, that seems to be changing politics a bit and making people amped up because they're only reading their own side of view.
Yeah, and I think I experienced it in two ways, because the Scottish electorate, as you know, were mostly for Remain. So I didn't have anywhere at home to kind of bring me back to earth, because they were all pro-EU. In fact, I think Scotland was in a bit of a bubble itself. I remember someone who was married to a Frenchman saying to me, I mean, I think I should vote in this EU referendum, but, it's not really going to go to leave.
A lot of people said that, Leo, didn't they? That since the result, they're surprised by what happened. I guess partly polling might have been to blame. But I mean, are you surprised by some of these numbers around? Does it look like Brexit's won the argument then?
I think it's a bit like Scotland, that it's sort of it's not that it's won the argument. It's just sort of it hasn't lost the argument. Nothing much has changed. In most people's minds, sort of feels. Theresa May said the obvious thing: Brexit means Brexit. I'm assuming most people are hearing that and like, well, the debate's over. We've moved on. Politics has been shaken up a bit. We've got a new prime minister. It's all sort of going ahead.
Let's get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's clearly going to be a long term, on-running argument about what it actually means, but. I mean, I don't think for most people the fundamentals of the debate have really changed very much. And, that's why you're seeing pretty much the same numbers all the way along.
Although, Julia, Owen Smith in the leadership race for the Labour Party has talked about a second referendum, hasn't he? And I guess this presents a challenge for Labour, because, a sizeable number of Labour voters, particularly up north, voted Leave. But then we shouldn't forget that the overwhelming majority of Labour supporters are pro-EU. So it's a difficult balancing act for the party to navigate, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think also it's very difficult when we don't know what Brexit actually looks like. I mean, Brexit means Brexit doesn't really tell you anything.
what is Brexit? Yeah,
and I think just at the moment, people are still not quite there in terms of what seeing it on the street. I mean, we talked earlier before we were recorded about someone I met who was a grocer in Edinburgh who'd started to see the impact of the weaker pound. But for most of us, it just means holidays are a bit more expensive. But what we are starting to see is the economic data creep in. And even today, there was a rather surprising thing that the Bank of England has started this stimulus, and one part of that is it creates new bonds that it sells, and it wasn't able to find enough people to buy these, which is fairly unusual, and it's a very technical thing, but it does raise questions, because that's the first time that stimulus hasn't worked quite as expected, as far as I know.
We were talking about what Brexit actually means, and there was another part, and I do recommend this poll for people to look at. I think it was 21 things about Brexit or about leaving the EU or something, but we'll post a link later. There was another question on there which asked this very question around what happens next, and it asked people to essentially choose between being in the common market and controlling immigration. The wording is more complicated than that, but that was ultimately the choice that was offered. And it was a pretty even split, 43% saying the most important thing is that Britain keeps access to the common market in Europe, 43% also saying the most important thing is that Britain gets complete control over its immigration policies. Unsurprisingly, Remain and Leave voters think differently on this. I mean, Leo, I'll bring you in on this, because my reaction to seeing those numbers was that, having thought that we were obviously going to stay in a single market, that maybe that's not as inevitable as I originally personally thought, because actually those people that decide you've sold us out over Brexit, Theresa May, can just say, rehash the same argument about economy versus immigration and have the same result.
So I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at this question. So, okay, firstly, the public are pretty much evenly split. Do we want to stay in the common market, or do we want to effectively leave the common market and get control over our immigration? Now, obviously, on the face of it, that gives you a problem. But look, the public were effectively evenly split, give or take a couple of percentage points on the referendum anyway. So that shouldn't come as a surprise. And yet, Remain voters want the more EU thing, Leave voters want the less EU thing. So if I just had this poll and I was Theresa May or her advisor, I would think, well, you know, the Remainers were never going to be satisfied. So let's do what we can to appeal to the Leavers, which would suggest, OK, you go for the most dramatic option and you go for whatever you can to get border control. The problem is, although I agree this poll is great and has lots of really interesting things in it, this single question is probably my main issue with the poll, that I don't like the way they've worded this question. I think the response is quite significant because of that. So the first option is, it's quite dry, it's quite technical. Most important thing is keep its access to the common market in Europe. Second option, it's quite emotive. Most important thing, Britain gets complete control over its immigration policies. Now, if anything, I'm surprised that they ended up evenly split. ComRes did another question, essentially trying to ask the same thing, and used more, what I would consider more balanced language, talking about whether it's more important to have free trade or more important to reduce immigration. And neither of them included the word control. And the thing about that is Leavers were much more evenly split with that. It was, I think, 42% free trade, 56% reduce immigration. And I think it's that poll that really that makes me think the government's got a real problem. Because if it was just this and we knew that Leavers just wanted to blow everything up and get control of the immigration, it would be fine. But given that you can actually phrase it in other ways and even Leavers don't know what they want, then it looks a lot harder.
I suppose really this speaks to Theresa May's problem, doesn't it? Ultimately, she's got to deliver something. You know, in theory, there is evidence, I suppose, that the single market, she can position the single market is really important. But then she's got that right-wing press again, hasn't she,
and
to deal with.
And it's interesting because she's built up her reputation as a Home Secretary, and there she can just be tough on immigration or try to speak about being tough on immigration, and she doesn't have to worry about the economic side, whereas now she does, which I think is great because I think some of her policies have been so terrible for, say, the higher education sector. But in this case, I mean, I guess it depends also what you think both of those issues are. Like, if you believe that immigration, the feelings about immigration are partly a response to economic change, then that informs your attitude to the common market as well. And if you believe that the worst thing that could happen right now is a massive economic crash, then you're going to prioritise the common market and stability over immigration because your view would be that, you know, the worse it gets, the worse the backlash to immigration would be. But I suspect that won't be her way of thinking, particularly if she's been in the Home Office.
One of the things that would worry me if I was in the Tory government or in favour of a single market argument is that buried beneath a lot of the polling is that the fact that people tend to think the EU has a negative impact on the NHS. It was one of the things that struck me during the it's a fairly even split, but actually when you ask people, they tend to side with the argument that immigration causes pressure on public services and therefore the NHS is worse off, rather than the EU delivers economic growth and therefore we need that money to spend on the NHS.
Or even we get the immigrants who work in the NHS.
Quite, absolutely. And I just wonder whether that still hasn't really been engaged with, this idea. Certainly it doesn't feel like it has to me, and I watch these things relatively closely, that this idea that actually we need economic growth and that benefits our public services above the immigration argument. You know, these people sort of, I don't know what the correct phrase to use would be, but, you know, creating too many numbers or a burden on public services. So that's something I feel like the government has to find a way of dealing with. I mean, I guess some people would say that, hang on a minute, we haven't even left the European Union yet. Maybe we won't. I mean, what do we think about that? I mean, Leo, do you think there's any hope for those people that voted Remain and still hope it won't actually happen?
Yeah, I sort of think it's possible. I think what Theresa May is doing is probably the only thing that she can do as someone who clearly, you know, didn't back leave, which is essentially not to own the problem, but not to be seen as a blocker. So she's done all these noisy things that suggest she's dealing with it, and then she's made it someone else's problem to deal with. And as long as she is sort of seen as a cheerleader for it, then she doesn't have that much skin in the game of making it really have to happen that quickly.
Well, she's the Prime Minister. If it doesn't happen, arguably her side will get rid of her.
Well, yeah, but as long as no one has a kind of smoking gun that she's holding it back, you know, she's given the key posts to the leavers, so it's sort of their problem now, isn't it?
Julia, final word to you. On Theresa May and leave. I mean, Theresa May and leave. I mean, will Brexit even happen?
I think we'll see a version of Brexit. I think what Theresa May would like to see is a Brexit with the most continuity possible. So whether or not that's what we're imagining at the moment, it could be something much more gradual, and there maybe won't ever be a day that we suddenly jump into Brexit. Perhaps we'll see things more gradually negotiated.
That's a good point. I mean, we assume that tomorrow's Brexit, but actually it might be a process rather than an event, I suppose. Well, that's all we've got time for this week's Political Betting Polling Matters show. A big thanks to my guests, Julia Rampen and Leo Barassi. Join us in the coming weeks. We'll be talking about events across the pond.